Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
The old man is out and the oldest of the Keatsman three is in. I'm Spencer Keatsman on a Football Friday, previewing the Chiefs and Titans, two teams that have become very familiar with each other over the past few years, both in the regular season and, of course, the postseason. Kansas City is still looking for their first A-plus performance in Week 7, and Tennessee, coming off a very fluky win over Buffalo, has a lot of confidence in Derrick Henry and their running game, which is problematic for the Chiefs' D. A very well-known comedian is in hot water with Netflix and the LGBT community, and this story is kind of a joke. No pun intended. In my new home state of Arizona, a tribal community has filed a motion to upend legal sports betting. And this is a giant waste of time. Riley Gates of 24/7 Sports joins for his weekly segment breaking down the NFL. It's brought to you by Joslyn's Jewelry, a family-owned and operated business for generations and a proud sponsor of Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Visit Joslyn's at 95th in Antioch. And as for Gary or Dave, or you can chat with a non-commissioned jewelry expert and know that you're getting the best jewelry at the best prices. But they've got more. Joslyn's does thousands of repairs every year for a fraction of what corporate jewelers charge because it's the right thing to do for their valued customers. Joslyn's Jewelry, the jeweler you'll recommend to your friends and family, online at joslynsjewelry.com. Whether it's complete collision repair or just a couple of door dings you want pulled out with paintless dent removal, Merriam Body Shop will do it all with the best customer service in the industry. Merriam Body Shop is a State Farm preferred collision center and can handle it from start to finish. They even offer complete auto detailing. Give them a call, 913-362-1198, for an appointment just off I-35 and Johnson Drive, or visit online at merriambodyshop.com. AmazingGarageFloors.net is locally owned and operated by John Hutchins, a great American patriot that served with honor. Hutch can seal your driveway and add years to the life of your concrete or get you that amazing garage floor you've always wanted. This is a home improvement project you want and will love, but let's let Hutch do it. A lot of people think they can do this themselves, and quite honestly, they just can't. Give Hutch a call at 913-901-7139 or log on to AmazingGarageFloors.net. And finally, brought to you by Buck Roofing. Buck Roofing is Kansas City's premier residential and commercial roofer, and they offer free roof inspections to KKHI listeners. You don't want to climb up there. Trust me, it's a bad idea. Call Ron Buck at 913-384-2680 and schedule your inspection. And keep that number in your contacts just in case you have that emergency. We're coming up on the winter season. It gets cold, it snows, the roof gets heavy. You never know what could happen. You don't want to leak. Online at rbuckroofing.com, you'll sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the week over your head. It's a Football Friday on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. I'm Spencer. Let's hit it.
Elite Automation presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Make your building great again. Online at eliteautomate.com.
Boy, playoff baseball has gotten interesting. We've got two game sixes, and it's pretty exciting. I've enjoyed watching these games. There's been some walk-offs. There's been some last night Chris Taylor for the Dodgers hit three home runs. Obviously, Kike Hernandez for the Red Sox has been tearing it up. There's been some exciting storylines. It's just a little different now. The Dodgers, in an 11-2 win last night, used seven pitchers. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that drags the game out a little bit. I don't know if it's completely necessary when you're blowing somebody out to use your entire bullpen per se, but they do have a day off to get everybody some rest. I was watching that. I'm like, really? They're really doing this? They're up by like nine runs. They're bringing another pitcher in the game. I mean, I get it. You want to hold on to that, especially when you're facing elimination, but it's kind of silly. And that's kind of what it's gotten to. But there's some interesting stuff. Later tonight is Game 6 in Houston with the Red Sox and the Astros, and then Saturday afternoon will be Game 6 in Atlanta with the Dodgers and Braves. But we're starting off with Netflix. Everyone has Netflix, right? It's gotten huge. I just read that the Squid Game show, that really violent Korean game show thing, is now the most streamed show that Netflix has ever had. And that's going to keep happening, obviously. As Netflix gets bigger, the next new show is going to be streamed more. It's just the way it is. I mean, it was House of Cards. It was Ozark. Now it's Squid Game is what it's called. But regardless, Dave Chappelle is a very, obviously a very famous comedian and a very, very rich comedian. Netflix paid him $60 million to do four specials over the span of, I think, the last 5 years. And he just wrapped up his last one. They aired it. I watched it. I didn't think it was as funny as the other ones, but I'm a big Dave Chappelle fan. I grew up in junior high watching the Chappelle Show on Comedy Central. Don't know if my parents knew if I was watching that or not, but I did not care because it was very, very funny and sort of groundbreaking in terms of cable comedy and sketch comedy TV shows. It set the tone for a new generation of television shows, quite honestly. But Dave Chappelle is known. He's been controversial in the past. What comedian hasn't? They make fun of everybody. Dave Chappelle makes fun of everyone. And throughout these specials on Netflix, he's gone at the LGBT community with comedy. He refers to it as art. He doesn't need to defend his art. But it's gotten to the point now where after this last one that the LGBT community, they staged, and Netflix people, some people that work there are up in arms about this as well. There was a walkout last Wednesday, a couple days ago at Netflix. And I'm just sitting here thinking, like, guys, what is this going to accomplish? Like, I understand sticking up for what you believe in. That's what this country is all about. But this community has gotten very sensitive. Maybe rightfully so. I don't know what it's like to be in their shoes. I really don't. But what I do know is that a lot of people who go through a trans operation end up regretting it at some point. You don't really hear about those people. You really don't. That's why I firmly believe you should have to be 18 years old to do this operation, because like a high school kid wants to do it. I was in high school once. I didn't know a thing. I didn't know anything about myself, really. I didn't know what I was going to be capable or what I wasn't going to be capable of doing later in life. And I could only imagine adding that to the fact that you want to change your body parts. I don't believe that should be allowed. And what parent would let their kid do that is what I want to know. If you're an adult and you're off on your own, you're 30 years old and you want to do whatever, that's a totally different story. But regardless, Chappelle has made some jokes about the LGBT community and they are just not happy. And during this stand-up, Dave Chappelle, a black man, talks about a story where he encountered a conversation with somebody from that community at a bar in Austin, Texas. I don't know if these are made up stories or not. You can never tell with comedians sometimes because they make stuff up. They make up situations to deliver a joke or a punchline or whatever. But it sounds like this actually happened. And a trans person approached him and basically said, "You don't understand the hardship, the struggle, the discrimination that we've gone through. This is a white lady. Most trans people are white. They are." And I mean, it's kind of white privilege to be able to complain about an operation you chose to do, right? And say you're discriminated because of that. Dave Chappelle is a black man, and you're going to tell him you don't know what it's like to face discrimination like this? And he ended the joke by saying that the lady was with another black person, and Dave said to him, "Hey, do you want to tell your girl something here?" I mean, it was, the delivery of it was actually kind of funny. But he's right. I mean, to say to him that he doesn't know what it's like to go through the discrimination that they're going through is false. Every black person has gone through some sort of discrimination, at least at some point in their life. It's just the way it is. And that was basically his defense. Like, look, don't come at me and say I don't know what it's like to be discriminated by a majority group of people, because I do. I am a black man in the United States. That's essentially what he's trying to tell people. And the LGBT community does not get that. They think they are a very, very special group of people, that their problems are the only problems that matter, and their problems are the only problems that anyone faces. It's just really not the case. And if there's one thing we've learned, this happened at Spotify with Joe Rogan. I've talked about this before. Employees at Spotify threatened to boycott that. Spotify is paying Joe Rogan $100 million to do a podcast with them. And you think you are going to make a difference and try to get him out of there? It ain't happening. It's the same thing with Netflix. What's his name? Sandra Dandos, the CEO. Ted Sarandos is the CEO of Netflix. He stood up for Dave Chappelle at the beginning of all this, and now he's gone back and saying he's screwed up to try to please the community. Look, it's gone a little too far, especially with employees. Like, if I'm a CEO of a company and my employees are boycotting something that I'm paying $60 million to have on my platform, I'm sorry, you're fired. Get out of here. I can appreciate that you don't agree with it. You don't agree with the politics of it. Whatever. This is my business. You're out. Goodbye. I'm sorry. You can go complain somewhere else, because it's not happening with me. All right, real quick before we get to sports here, football in particular with Riley Gates. Here in my home state of Arizona, a team of lawmakers a legal team filed a motion to dismiss sports betting that just became legalized in Arizona in September. The Yavapai Prescott Indian Tribe in Maricopa County Superior Court on Monday, arguing the tribe waited too long to file its complaint and its actions could have been dire consequences for the 10 Arizona tribes and 8 sports teams that have received an Arizona sports betting license. So basically, the governor, Doug Ducey, he's just going to throw this out. This thing's going to get dismissed because... Look, as important as the Native communities are to the state of Arizona, and, you know, we all want to see them thrive, 100%. And part of the way they've thrived in the past is casinos. The reality is most Native casinos, they don't have, like, table games. They don't do poker. They don't really have, like, those big money items. They just have little, you know, video games and slots and stuff like that. It just doesn't draw in like the table games do, or even sports betting for that matter. So I have a feeling that a lot of these tribal casinos are really struggling right now, and that's why they're trying to do this, by saying you kind of undercut us here, and there wasn't much we can do about it, because they have to be taking a hit. I mean, Yavapai Prescott, like... who's going to go there for a casino? Like, it's, you just happen to be there. That's why you go. Like, it's not really a destination spot unless you're there for a weekend. It's kind of in the high country. It's in the mountains in Arizona, so it's a little cooler up there. So there are some things to do, and people do go there, but it's just not like when you go to Prescott or somewhere like that, you don't go there for the casino. You go there for other things. You go there for the outdoor, the hiking, even, you know, snowboarding in the wintertime, stuff like that. But they have to be taking a hit, and I think that that's the feeling, and this is probably happening all over the country in the states where sports betting is now legal. There's a lot of them now. I have a feeling that a lot of these tribal casinos and tribal communities are taking a hit because of this, and they have a problem with it. But I've also got the feeling that a lot of tribal communities kind of missed out. I feel like there at some point in time, there had to have been an opportunity to get sports betting legal on tribal land in their casinos. I would have to do some digging on that, but I've got the feeling that at some point they missed the boat on it. I don't know the laws and how that would pertain, whether it would have to go through the state, but tribal communities are their own, like, sovereign land. It's government property. It's federal land. It's not state land, it's federal land. So I have a feeling they've kind of missed the boat on this, and they're suffering. But how it works in Arizona is there's a few casinos here in the Phoenix area that are on tribal land. They have it. They have sports betting. There's sports betting at the Cardinal Stadium now, the Phoenix Suns Arena, the D-backs, TPC Scottsdale, where the Phoenix Open is. They have sports books at these locations now. And it's just so much more accessible. And honestly, sports gambling is a lot easier and a lot more fun than going to an Indian casino and playing video poker. I don't know many people who are getting in their car and driving to tribal land to play video poker. I just don't see it. So you're going to start seeing a lot of these cases pop up in these states where it's become legal, where people are just trying to get rid of it and saying it's not good for tribal communities, it's not good for any community, blah, 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 which in reality it is. The money goes to education, transportation, all that stuff that states need, and there's a lot of that money being raked in. Arizona right now is a hotbed for sports gambling. There's always people in Phoenix from out of town. And what are they doing when they're here? They're going to sports bars and they're betting on games. That's what people are doing when they come to Arizona. You can bet on golf. You can bet on anything. And you do it on your phone. You don't have to go anywhere. It's so much easier and so much more fun to bet on sports because, one, everyone watches football. And two, it's just the ease of it. You don't have to go into a casino. During COVID, a lot of casinos took hits because people weren't going to them. Because there's a lot of people, they limited how many people can come in. You got to play blackjack through plexiglass with the dealer. it's just weird. So I'd expect more stories like this to pop up, but it's not going anywhere. And it's going to be legalized in all 50 states, I would say, in the next 5 to 10 years, probably. I'm just wondering which state is going to be the last to do it. I don't know if it would be Kansas, but it might be. Certainly don't think it's going to be Missouri, but I don't know. I could see it's going to be one of the plain states in the Midwest. That's what it's going to be, and I'm interested to see that. It's time again for the weekly segment. Riley Gates of 24/7 Sports joins us, and I'm sure he's got another vacation planned at some point this week. Are you staying in town this week, Riley? What's going on? The last 2 weeks, I think you've had something going on, right?
Yeah, I was in Minnesota 2 weeks ago. I was in Colorado last week. And this weekend, I'll be down in Wichita. Friend's okay. Getting married, and I'm in his wedding, so I'll be down there on Friday.
Nice.
Yep.
It's been a while since I've been to a wedding. I can't remember the last time, honestly. It was last year. Courtney and I went to one. But before that, it had been quite a while.
This is the second of my... I have a group of really close high school friends, and this is the second of that group that got married within this calendar year. And so it's been an interesting year for sure.
The best thing about living away from home is there's a lot of weddings that I miss, but a lot of them I want to go to as well. So it is what it is. But the Kansas City Chiefs back to 3-3, obviously a familiar foe again. And this is kind of what happens when you win your division every year. You're going to face other teams that win their division every year. So whether it's a Buffalo or a Tennessee, or Kansas City's really starting to run into common opponents in the AFC and the NFC, for that matter, pretty much every year, which I think is kind of cool. It kind of creates, I wouldn't say a rivalry, but some sort of familiarity with your opponent to where you guys don't like each other because you've played each other so much. And especially in the Chiefs case with the Titans, they met in the playoffs 2 years in a row and in the regular season 2 years in a row. So that's pretty crazy. Obviously Tennessee, they got a very, very lucky win on Monday Night Football against the Buffalo Bills. What do you make of the Titans so far and what we've seen out of their sort of inconsistent season?
Yeah. Well, I think it's, they've started to play better. And Ryan Tannehill playing a little bit better, obviously, is a big factor in that. Having Derrick Henry in your offense is always going to be just massive. Just having that running presence, having a guy that can take away or not necessarily take away. Sorry, I misspoke there. It just gives you something that the defense has to prepare for a little bit more. They have to obviously respect the run, which opens up a little bit more in the passing game. And that obviously is what allows Tannehill to kind of work a little bit better. Like I said, I think I said it on maybe 2 weeks ago, something like that. Tannehill had started really slow. He just really wasn't playing the way that he played at the end of last year, but he's thrown one pick in his last three games, looking good. That Jets loss, obviously very bad for the Titans, but kind of one of those games that happens to, you know, the bad team, the winless team finds a way to win one game. It seems like every year the Titans just got kind of caught in that crossfire, but yeah, they are starting to improve, and a win like that over Buffalo, I think, gives them a lot of confidence right now, just as they kind of try to figure themselves out again.
Yeah. So the Titans are 4-2. Obviously the loss to the Jets really sticks out. I mean, that's just a huge sore thumb there, but so there's three teams in the NFL that are 4-2, and all three of them are in the AFC. It's the Raiders, Bengals, and Titans. Which one of those teams, if you're Kansas City, do you worry about the most? And I obviously think it's the Raiders, just because you got to play them twice. But Cincinnati's not on the schedule. Tennessee is. So which one of those 4-2 teams do you not want to see down the road?
Yeah, I think it has to be the Raiders. I think they, like you said, obviously playing them twice is a huge concern. And it's a team that the Chiefs haven't faced yet, so we don't necessarily know how they'll stack up against the Raiders. You know, every team's obviously different. How can and I think there's a lot obviously going on with the Gruden stuff, kind of mixing things up within the organization, but they sure didn't look like they missed a beat, obviously handling the Broncos with ease over the weekend. So they look like they're still going to be a really good team. And one that has a lot of weapons that I think with a Chiefs defense that was improved against Washington, although I think Washington's kind of, you know, a really good get right game for the Chiefs. So it's kind of tough to take
They stink.
They're bad, but I think, you know, you still have those concerns about the Chiefs defense, especially with some of those injuries still lingering and a passing attack that, man, when Derek Carr kind of clicks with his receivers, it's they have a really scary offense, because I think Henry Ruggs is a guy that can get behind the defense really quick. He's super fast, can escape defenders, so that's really tough to stop with this kind of a defense. And I think Darren Waller is like one of the most overlooked tight ends in the NFL, because you know you have Travis Kelce, you have George Kittle, and it's kind of like, okay, well, then you've forgotten about Darren Waller, who the Raiders love to utilize. So I think it has to be the Raiders. I think Cincinnati's getting there, but they're not quite turning that corner yet. And the Titans are just, you know, I think the Titans have been exposed so far this year.
Yeah, and you mentioned Travis Kelce. That's where I wanted to go next, because obviously the guy's been as consistent as any tight end in our lives, really, besides maybe like Tony Gonzalez, like obviously two Chiefs. Have been. I mean, obviously there's been some good ones, but like Gronk was great. He's not consistent. I mean, he missed full seasons at a time. Kelce hasn't done that. Like, he's been really healthy. I'm kind of curious as to where you think he is in his career, and at what point does this production from him, and not only him, but maybe Tyreek Hill as well, start to shift in a different way? Because I just don't know how long Kelce can stay out there running over everybody every time he touches the ball. I mean, the guy catches it 10 times a game, and he's running full steam ahead. I give the guy credit. He's tough as hell. He's not going to take himself out of plays, but at some point, at what point does his focus from the tight end he is now to the tight end he's going to be in his 30s?
Well, I honestly thought it might kind of start to look that way this year. I thought they utilized him a lot last year. I thought he took a lot of hits and like you said, running over people all the time. I thought that was going to catch up to him. I really did think he was going to maybe regress a little bit this season. And that's not to say I thought he was going to be bad. I just thought he wasn't going to be what he was last year, but he's looking really good. Obviously it helps, you know, you get 11 targets in a game or something like that.
Yeah.
That's kind of the, you know, the roughly the area that they're kind of utilizing his target numbers in. So you know, it's so tough to just kind of project longevity. I think the biggest thing for him, unless I'm completely blanking, hasn't really had a significant, like, you know, blown ACL or anything like that, no. Which is huge.
He's missed a game or two, but he's never had anything significant.
Right. So, I mean, I think that's big. And I think more than anything, your biggest concern as a Chiefs fan is how long, you know, you can kind of point to that if contracts start becoming an issue. And,
right.
You know, maybe like Tyreek Hill, if he, I don't know what the Chiefs' plan for Tyreek Hill long-term is, but if it gets to a point where he looks to explore options elsewhere, or the Chiefs decide to trade him for some reason, anything like that, you know, I'm not by any means suggesting that that's going to happen soon, but if it is to happen at some point, obviously that would put a lot more focus on Travis Kelce. It would make it very difficult for him to kind of become that or remain that consistent part of the offense. But it's kind of, you know, it's like KU in basketball, Oklahoma in football. Until you see it stop, you know, you don't really have a whole lot of reason to believe it's going to stop. So I think until Travis Kelce starts showing signs of that regression, there's no reason to really be concerned about it.
I mean, how many times have we seen Kansas basketball drop a few conference games in January and then just run away with it after that, rattle off like 10 straight? They've done it. Like multiple
times. See it in my nightmares. Yeah.
You're right, though. I mean, it's a good example. And is that sort of the attitude where the Kansas City Chiefs are, is like, you know, until somebody knocks us off, this is still our division to lose? Because what I saw last week was a team, even though they got a little sloppy at times, Mahomes' pick in the first half where he was falling over, you just can't do that. Just take the sack, man. Like, it's not that big of a deal. You know, you'll have third and long. Who cares? Just don't throw an interception there. So there was still some sloppy stuff, but it looks like the attitude has sort of changed. I think the Buffalo loss, you know, kind of, you know, made him wake up and smell the coffee a little bit, I guess. And because the Chiefs haven't really been in this spot early in the season where they've, you know, sitting in last place, five or six teams in the AFC with better records. It's been a while.
Yeah, and you know, I think for the Chiefs, like you said, you know, until you lose the division, it's your – that my roommate was kind of freaking out. He, you know, this team's not going to make the playoffs. They're going to go under 500.
I'm freaking out.
And I mean, it still could happen, but I told him, I said, look, until they don't win the AFC West, until they do miss the playoffs, there's zero reason to be concerned about them. You know, you have to have it actually take place before I'm going to really be throwing up my red alarm, anything like that. And I think also in the Washington game, what you saw or what you got out of the Chiefs was what makes the Chiefs so good at times. The one that keeps coming to my mind is and I'm blanking on who it was, the defensive lineman that got the interception. It kind of threw right into his chest and he just kind of ended up with the ball. Like, that's the type of play that the Chiefs have made.
The Buffalo game?
No, it was against Washington. It was bad. Washington was deep in their own territory. And I just can't remember. I blank on who it was off the top of my head. But that's the kind of play that the Chiefs make that, like, okay, of course the Kansas City Chiefs made that play. You know, there's zero reason he should have been picking that ball off, but it ends up in his arms. He holds on to it. Chiefs ball again like that. And so, yeah. You know, it's certainly good. You're being aware, you're ready to make that play, but that's not a play you typically make. And that's the type of Chiefs that I think we've seen recently. And so that kind of sparks your confidence, gets them going. And, you know, when like that, even over Washington, I think just getting a significant win like that, where it's not in question down to the very end, it kind of rebuilds your confidence. And if you can go on the road and beat Tennessee this weekend, I mean, that really does a lot for you as you get ready for this brutal stretch of games coming up here.
Here's my thing, though, that we're sitting here six games in. Chiefs should probably be 4-2. I think the Baltimore thing was still a little fluky. The other games they lost, they just got outplayed. But they haven't had one performance in a game yet this year that makes me think that performance would win a playoff game. You know what I mean? Like, there has even the comeback against the Browns week one, yeah, that was great, but, you know, I don't know really how clutch the Browns are or how good the Browns are. They seem to lose games that matter the most. And whereas in recent years the Chiefs have won games that mattered the most. But I don't know. I haven't seen one performance or one, like, glimpse of even a full half of football really that makes me think that would go win a playoff game.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's why I think this Tennessee game is so crucial, because, you know, whether or not you think Tennessee is going to make the playoffs, they're kind of still a questionable team as well. But this is a game that
you
really need to go out.
Their division sucks. Their division is hot garbage. They should win that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But, you know, it's a team that, like you said earlier, you've seen them in the playoffs twice. So, you know, you need to have your A game on when you're playing a team like this. And against, like, you know, the Giants, let's say that in the next week, you got to have a really strong showing against a really bad team for me to really feel good about you, you know, getting in the playoffs and winning a game, because every game that they've played against teams that are going in the playoffs, they just have looked really, really bad. And that just kind of is recipe for a wild card round loss, which would be, I think, not only shocking, but disappointing with this franchise.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, at this point, though, I think I would take the Chiefs sneaking in at a wild card. I know that Kansas City's had a lot of playoff games at Arrowhead in recent years, but the way things are going, is it crazy to say that I would sit here right now in the middle of October and say that I would take a wild card berth for the Kansas City Chiefs? Does that just sound ridiculous?
Well, no, I don't think so at all, because yeah, the Chargers have, you know, the full grip of the West right now. And so it's their division to lose. Obviously the Chiefs can still get back and win the division, you know, things like that. But no, I don't think that's crazy at all. I think at this point in the season at 3-3 with three pretty tough losses, any way that you could get a playoff appearance and a playoff win, I think would be, you have to take it as a Chiefs fan.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. When you start off 3-3, like, what are their chances? Like 20% right now, maybe? I'd have to look, but I see the analytics like every Monday. They always pop up, you know, or excuse me, Tuesday for that matter, after Monday Night Football ends. This team has this chance. This team has this chance. And you never know what could happen, but I feel like the Chiefs' schedule, you know, you get through Tennessee. I think that, you know, you got Denver twice. You've got the Raiders twice. I don't know how good the Raiders really are. I mean, they've shown signs this year that they can be pretty good. And then you've got to go to the Chargers. That's a tough one. I think it's going to be okay. I think that they're going to get to – they've got to win at least 10 games just based off of this schedule. I would take that, and that sounds so lame. But I would absolutely take 10 wins.
Yeah, I'm looking right here, and I'm, you know, just real quick, it counted up 7 games that I would say even today I expect the Chiefs to
right.
win. And, you know, that I think that if you those games obviously would get you to 10, and I think that makes you feel a little bit better about where you're at. I do think it's beneficial for the Chiefs that they get the Broncos twice yet, and they do. I think the Raiders look good, but I still think they're better than Raiders. They get them twice. And, you know, Pittsburgh's not looking good at all. They should win that game. Cincinnati, they're better than Cincinnati. So, yes, I can understand the panic and some fans, and I can understand why people would say, like, I'm not really sure they make the playoffs. And I think those vibes are going to probably continue throughout November, because I don't see them going, you know, undefeated in November, whether it's the Cowboys and Packers or, you know, Raiders and Cowboys, whatever the combination is. I think they'll drop a couple games in November. And so I can understand the panic. I can understand a little bit of frustration, but once December hits,
it's big honestly, boy football Spencer, time in December. Yeah.
I think once December hits and then, you know, close out the season in January, I think the Chiefs should go undefeated, honestly.
Well, that's,
I think they should go 6-0 to close the season.
It's, I hope it's flip flop, because the Chiefs in, like, especially last year, they weren't really that good in December. They were kind of just coasting because they knew they were winning
yeah.
the division. And they knew that they had a really good team, obviously. But you just mentioned Pittsburgh. I'm still trying to figure out what exactly transpired in the last, like, literally 9 seconds of the Monday Night Football game, where they reviewed the spot of it was whether or not he got a first down, right?
Yeah. Well, you mean in the final seconds?
No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the Sunday night game with Pittsburgh and Seattle, where yeah, they spiked the
with
ball.
With DK.
Yeah, where DK didn't run out of bounds. And then he fumbles, and his I don't remember who for Seattle recovered it, but – and then there's 9 seconds left, and they hurry up and spike it. And Tomlin was mad because they didn't review the whether or not he spiked it in time with 1 second left, or it was – the fact that it was a catch, because they reviewed to see if it was a catch in the first place. I think that's what he was mad about.
Well, that's where the confusion came from, too. Because
gave him an extra 3 seconds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the confusion came because everyone, you know, when they go to review, everyone at home, myself included, was thinking like, oh, they're reviewing how much time, you know, did he get the spike off in time? How many seconds should be left on the clock? And then they come out of the review and say, after review, the ruling of a catch stands.
Yeah,
and I didn't even know you were reviewing
yeah.
the catch. Like I thought it was clear as day that he caught the ball. The whole situation should have been avoided, because DK Metcalf, I don't know what the heck you're doing dancing to make a play when your team doesn't have any timeouts and there's
yeah.
like 9 seconds on the clock.
Yeah,
come on, man.
Like the 25. I mean, you've got a pretty good look at a game.
And all you had to do was take one step to the left.
Out of bounds.
There wasn't even anybody out there. He could have walked out of bounds. So it was a very frustrating situation, and I didn't even care who won that game. I just was so angry watching.
Well, it was just funny seeing Tomlin because I think he thought that they were reviewing whether or not Seattle got up with Geno Smith and spiked the ball in time before the clock expired, because Pittsburgh had acted like they didn't get the spike off. And then Tomlin all of a sudden figures out, wait, they were reviewing whether or not that was a catch. We know that was a catch, blah, 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 whatever. And then the Monday night game, there was the Josh Allen, some might have thought he got a first down on that big leaping play. And then they had fourth and one, and he slipped and lost the game. If he doesn't slip there, Buffalo wins that game. That's the thing in the NFL. It's like the margins are so thin between literally a very good quarterback, probably, in my opinion, an MVP candidate thus far this season, and Josh Allen slipping and falling on his ass, and they lose the game. I mean, this league is crazy, man.
Yeah, and I kind of along those lines, and not to start a big rant, but I think officiating needs to be cleaned up. It needs to be cleaned up mid-year, but it's not going to happen because it just, I don't know how you can really clean things up in the middle of the season. In the offseason, this has to be addressed. Whether it's pass interference flags, whether it's roughing the passer, targeting, or blatant things like spot of the ball. I mean, it's brutal. Dak Prescott had the ball in his hands laying over the goal line, and they ruled that he wasn't in the end zone.
Yeah.
And then he fumbles the next play. That takes the game from overtime, and Cowboys almost lose the game in overtime. And it would have been it probably would have been a double-digit win for Dallas if they get that touchdown. And so I just, all across the board, I've just seen really bad officiating this season, and it's kind of frustrating.
No, it's 100% something that you need to look at in the middle of the season. I disagree with you on that. They can
no, no, I think you need to. Yeah. I just don't know how. I just don't know how they do it, because I think getting everyone to buy into it is really difficult, because I think officials are hard-headed.
And the game is so under a microscope and watched under a microscope by so many millions of people across the country. I mean, you used to be able, officiating just was there before review. It was like none of this was a thing. Like, you trusted the official to get the spot right. Now it's like, well, that guy clearly sucks. He missed that spot by 6 inches. How is that not a first down? You know,
if I can sit on my couch with a beer in my hand on my 42 inch TV and see it clear as day, how can you not see it with all the 19 camera angles you have?
Well, that's the thing. When they go to review, I don't mind them getting it wrong on the spot, whatever. That's human error. Yeah. But when they go to review and still get things wrong and botch these situations, I don't
in
know.
In 4 or 5 minute reviews, too. These reviews should take 40 seconds.
Look, I don't want them to go to baseball. The baseball review system, I think, is terrible because they don't let the umpires on the field in baseball make the call. It's the guys in New York watching the game on TV. At least in the NFL, I'm pretty sure the officials on the field have some sort of say in the outcome of the play. I mean, they're talking to somebody on the horn. They've got guys that they're talking to, watching every angle. But some of these things are just so obvious, and they still don't do it. And you're seeing it in college as well. I mean, it might even be worse in college football. But you mentioned the Cowboys, Riley. I'm going to let you gloat for a minute, because they are pretty damn good. They've got a bye week this week, but this is a good football team right now.
It's a very good football team. And, everyone's starting to talk Super Bowl. Obviously, that's when the Cowboys are when the Cowboys are decent.
Where have we
talk
heard
Super
this
Bowl.
Before?
I'm not going there. I'm going to take the Nick Saban route here and say that that's rat poison, and we're just not going to listen to that. But I think the Cowboys have shown. I think they showed in that game against the Patriots that, they did everything wrong. There's zero reason the Cowboys should have won that game. They turned the ball over. They played bad defense, and yet they still find a way to come up and win. I think it's huge. The reemergence of Ezekiel Elliott cannot be understated, what he means to this team, because he just was terrible last season, and that made the Cowboys so easy to stop. And Dak Prescott is just he's absolutely at the top of the MVP conversation, if not leading it. I think he's incredibly consistent. He doesn't make mistakes. I'm a little bit concerned that the defense has started to kind of show signs of what they were last year, but they still are very good. I think it's really beneficial for the Cowboys that, honestly, they have one of the easiest schedules in the NFL in the regular season.
It
so.
Really is. I'm looking at it right
now. I mean, the Chiefs are the toughest team they have left to play. I guess the Cardinals maybe late, but
yeah, Cardinals
there are not many. Yeah, there are not many teams out there right now that I think Cowboys should lose to us. So I think you're looking at a 12 to 13 win team. But for the Cowboys, it's always about the playoffs. You know, it doesn't really matter. It, go back to 2016, Dak and Zeke's rookie year. They were 13-3. They were probably the best team in the NFC, but they go to Green Bay and they lost in their first playoff game. So that's the thing with the Cowboys, is it doesn't matter. They could win the rest of the games this season, but until they make it to an NFC championship game or a Super Bowl, it really doesn't matter.
All right, so here's my next question. Sunday, November 21st at 3:25 p.m. Central Time, where will you be?
I was going to take that. Without, like, trying to bore everyone with work, we get a full weekend off. We work every weekend.
Yeah.
We get a full weekend off, and then we get to pick an extra day. So I'm using my full weekend for the wedding this weekend, and I was going to use the extra day to go to that game because I so badly wanted to be there.
Of course.
And then I looked at ticket prices, man, and I couldn't. It's outrageous.
But they're high. They're high in every
stadium. It was over $300 to sit in the upper deck at Arrowhead. And
oh, wow.
Don't get me wrong. I think Arrowhead's great. Even sitting at the very top that I've done before, you can still see everything. It's still a good seat. But I couldn't justify paying, you know, half a month of rent or something like that on a football team. Even with this good team, I'm not convinced the Cowboys win. So I will be in my apartment working, but I will be glued to the TV for sure.
throughout my 31 years of life, I have sat in literally every different angle or spot in Arrowhead Stadium to watch a Chiefs game you could possibly do. I've literally sat in the front row on the 40-yard line behind the sideline. I've been, like, front row on the club level. I've been in the upper deck in the top corner where you can't see the corner of the end zone that's closest to you. That's the only bad seat, is up in that top corner. But honestly, one of my favorite views of Arrowhead, just because it's such a cool picture with, like, the fireworks for, like, especially at a night game going off when the team takes the field, is, like, upper deck right behind the end zone, like goalpost.
Yeah.
I think that's such a cool angle. I've sat in that one a couple different times. So, yeah.
Well, if anyone out there has tickets and they'd like to take me to that game, I will call my bosses and work on getting another.
How about
day
we
off.
Start a GoFundMe for Riley Gates to to go to the Chiefs and Cowboys, but we just don't. There's going to be plenty of Cowboys jerseys in the stands.
Oh, yeah.
Arrowhead. We don't need any more. That's one thing I've noticed about the NFL, by the way, is that, like, literally every game you watch on TV, there are so many of the other team's fans in the stands this year, and I think it's because people are finally like, hey, we can travel and go somewhere again. It's been a while.
Great.
I mean,
it's
the Raiders.
I love it.
The Raiders will never have a home field advantage again in Las Vegas, literally ever. Who doesn't want to go to Vegas? So,
and it makes the game so much better, just in general. Yeah. It just feels so much more normal. Yeah, I love it.
Cool, man. All right, Riley Gates of 24/7 Sports. Thanks again. Enjoy the games. This is going to be a fun weekend, both college and the NFL. Let's see if the Chiefs can get a win in Tennessee, and let's see if the Cowboys can actually have a decent bye week where nothing bad happens, nobody gets hurt coming off of it, because that would be a lot of fun on November 21st to see those two teams battling at their height. So thanks for joining, man.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yep, thank you.
Have a good one.